Packers to a 31-25 victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is NPR.
Support for NPR comes from the Pajamagram Company, offering hoodie footies and other women's pajamas delivered overnight and on Valentine's Day at pajamagram.com.
WCVE Public Radio. Andy Foldenauer joins us now from RBC Wealth Management for the Monday morning business news analysis. He's sitting in again for Brian Ford. Hi, Andy, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well, Wayne. How are you?
Well, the political turmoil in Egypt continues to be the top story, but based on the muted reaction from the stock markets, its perceived economic impact seems to be minimal. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, despite the steady stream of headlines and uncertainty flowing out of Egypt, the U.S. equity markets posted their best week in over 2 months. Both the Dow and the S&P 500 closed above key psychological levels of 1,300 on the S&P and 12,000 on the Dow. If we are to look at Egypt through the lens of the global economic landscape, they are the 27th largest country that generates approximately $200 billion in gross domestic product per year. To put that in perspective, this figure makes up about one-third of 1% of the world's GDP. This is a relatively small piece of the puzzle in the overall big picture of the global economic recovery. Majority of the U.S.-based multinational companies really have limited exposure to Egypt.
Well, if the instability were to linger, what potential impact could it have on the global economy?
Well, oil is definitely a good barometer of risk in the Middle East, and prices there are currently hovering around $92 a barrel. Egypt is not a significant oil producer, ranking only 29th in the world. And also, contrary to some initial speculation last week, the Suez Canal isn't that crucial of a trade route for oil, as it is too narrow for the largest supertankers. The biggest concern is if the political instability that started in Tunisia and now in Egypt were to spread to other countries in the Middle East. Let's face it, Egypt is not the only nation in the region marked by autocratic rule and great income inequality. If a revolt in Egypt encourages similar acts in the states that surround the Persian Gulf, the result could be a temporary but serious disruption in oil supply to the world. Even concerns about such an eventuality could lead to a spike in oil prices. And, while these fears may never materialize, it is clear why this issue in Egypt and ultimately stability in the Middle East remains critical. The Egyptian crisis has not yet reached a level that changes our overall view of the U.S. or global economy and the relative valuation of assets. However, it does remind us that despite the improving economic news and corporate profits, that it is important for investors to maintain a balanced approach to risk in their portfolios.
Last Friday, we received the monthly unemployment report that gave us a mixed bag of news. What did you think?
Yeah, that's right. The January employment report was a little confusing in the data it provided. The consensus expectation was for 145,000 jobs to be created for the month, but the report indicated an increase of only 36,000 jobs. Most of the blame was given to the severe snowstorms that slammed large parts of the nation and in turn maybe interrupted the hiring process. Despite the small increase in payrolls, the unemployment rate surprisingly fell from 9.4% to 9%.
Well, how could job growth data indicate conditions have worsened and unemployment data indicate conditions have improved?
Well, that's a good question, and I think a lot of people were puzzled by the report because, first, the government uses two different polling methods to estimate job growth and the unemployment rate. Those two methods often tell different stories and can make for apples to oranges comparisons. And second, many people have, quote unquote, dropped out of the labor force to the tune of 2.2 million people during the past year. And yet they're still around. They're just not counted in the government's official unemployment rate anymore. So while it's easy to sit here and question whether the most recent data is telling the full story on employment, the important point for investors is that as long as jobs and employment is weak, stocks in the economy can depend on and accommodate a Federal Reserve. Over the past 2 years, the Fed has embarked on two rounds of quantitative easing, which essentially has been two huge rounds of stimulus for the economy. These measures are not without controversy, but have been a big help to both stocks and the economy. The general consensus is that until the unemployment rate drops below 8% or so, the Federal Reserve will continue to provide a tailwind for both investors and businesses.
We have a minute and a half. We've had a lot of earnings reports from companies over the past few weeks. Are there any identifiable trends for investors to capitalize on?
Yeah, even though much of North America has been buried in snow lately, it's not too early to think about spring cleaning. Stocks of companies with low credit ratings and weak balance sheets, or what we would also call junk stocks, have rallied massively when the U.S. cyclical bull market began in 2009. Over the past 2 years, these junk stocks have outperformed higher quality stocks, but we feel that 2011 will be a different story. First, strong earnings growth has been the high-octane fuel for many low-quality stocks. As the economic cycle matures, the overall pace of earnings growth is likely to slow. In our view, low-quality stocks will be more vulnerable to disappointing investors with earnings misses. Second, as earnings growth slows, the quality of earnings will likely come under greater scrutiny. Companies with high-quality earnings should benefit. So we think it is time for investors to clean out the closet by taking profits in low-quality U.S. stocks that have done well over the past 2 years. We would define quality as companies with strong balance sheets, industry-leading positions, high credit ratings, and solid revenue growth prospects. Also, these companies tend to have lower risk and volatility, mm-hmm. but also more exposure to defensive sectors compared to the broader market.
Okay, our time's gone for today, so we'll have to leave it there. Thanks again to Andy Foldenauer at RBC Wealth Management for business news analysis.
Thank you, Wayne.
It's 8:40.